Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, and I'm here to introduce Lawrence Drink, also known as Faki Lee, host for Blog Talk Radio Sunday's 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time show with his guest on today. I want to welcome everyone. We are now live on the show, and I'm going to let Lawrence Drink introduce himself and the guest, and we'll take it from there. Thank you, Lawrence. Can you hear me, Lawrence?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, you're on.
Okay. Welcome, everybody, to Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. This is Leon Abrams' radio show. What we do here is we try to bring in guests to give them back their voice, to give them back their power, their respect, and their humanity. We also speak on anything that's prison-related, reentry-related, business. We let people know what the formerly incarcerated are doing today. Today we have a very special guest named Jeffrey. I cannot pronounce your last name for the life of me. I'm sorry.
Deskovic.
Deskovic. Okay, thank you. And just so we give everybody, I'd like to do, if you want to reach Legacy Programs, you can look us up on legacyprograms.net. We're also on Facebook down as Legacy Programs, and each one teach one. Jeffrey, you want to give your contact information?
Yeah, people can reach me through my website, www.deskovic.org. That's D-E-S-K-O-V-I-C. There's a web form there that people can email me through. I'm also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, so I take messages there also. Just my name, Jeffrey Deskovic.
Nice. Thank you. So today we're going to have we're going to talk about reentry, the perspective from a prison wife to a wife that's dealing with a reentry of a formerly incarcerated. Unfortunately, she's come down with the COVID, so I apologize to everybody. So I'm going to kind of wing this, and we're going to try to involve everybody we can today because I really need your help. Jeffrey, you want to give a little insight of, you know, who you are, what you do, and your experience?
Sure. So I'm relevant for today's conversation because, you know, I've been home for 14 years now. I was incarcerated for 16 years. Unlike perhaps some of the other people on the show, just I was wrongfully incarcerated. So I did 16 years for a crime I was proven innocent of through DNA. And, you know, I am the founder of the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation for Justice, which has as its mission freeing wrongfully convicted people and passing laws aimed at preventing that from happening in the first place. We've been able to get 11 people home. We've helped pass eight laws, some of them with in collaboration with a group that could happen to you, which I'm an advisory board member of. And I'm also an attorney. I have a law degree and a master's degree. So looking forward to contributing to today's conversation with respect to reentry.
Nice. What have with reentry? Because I know what I've gone through, but I've only been out like 8 months, 7 months. How important are relationships down to the next door neighbor, to the person running the store, to your family? How important are these relationships for the success and permanent reentry on our behalf?
They're essential. I recall when I was released, and again, I've been home for 14 years. I mean, it was extremely lonely. I would say just being lonely and not having, the social relationships, whether with neighbors or activity partners, some of whom become friends or even family connections. Those are important in order to, you know, feel love and a sense of belonging and have people to socialize. When you are incarcerated, they do have recreation. So, you know, those are social relationships, even if it's just on the activity partner level. You know, but there's no card table, there's no chess area, there's no workout area, there's not no sports TV, you know, where normally in prison you would just go to those areas in the recreational area, you know, you'd ask for next game, and then everybody would remember you, so the next time you came out, you would have people to to interact with doing those activities, but there is no analogous thing on the outside here. And, you know, I found it very difficult with, you know, limited to no social relationships when I came back out. So I would say that that's extremely important. Built into that is also not just simply knowing who people were. I mean, whenever I would bump into members of my extended family, I mean, I obviously knew who they were from memories of them from when I was younger, you know, but I had had little to no contact with many of them while I was incarcerated. And so I was it was awkward meeting up with them. You know, the natural growth and progression and development that people go through was much more pronounced on their end because, again, so much 16 years had passed by since I last interacted with them, and certainly I was a different person, and I knew that they had not been incarcerated. So then how would they understand what I would need to talk about as far as being incarcerated or the difficulties of reentry? So all of that is a factor.
Nice. Now, when you say you were different, can you go in a little into that?
Yeah, I was changed. I was altered. I mean, that impact of being wrongfully incarcerated or even just incarcerated, period, it changed me. You know, it's not, there's a limited amount of stimuli in the prison out here. There's a lot of stimuli. There's a very limited number of decisions you could make while you're incarcerated. There's many decisions you can make while you're free, whether it's you going shopping or what you're gonna eat. There's a lack of structure, even as far as like what you're gonna do in a given day. But also there's the psychological after effect of having been incarcerated. I mean, it's common to feel, for example, that you've been frozen in time, or that you're processing things at a slower speed. There's post-traumatic stress disorders, panic attacks. There's stigma of having been incarcerated. So, like, how much of that rubbed off on you? Is it safe to be alone someplace with you? So those are things that are in other people's mind, which wind up impacting the person who's formerly incarcerated. So I experienced that. So that's what I mean, you know, and it's a traumatizing thing. You know, and I know that injustice exists in the world, and I have less of an idealistic viewpoint than what I had prior to being arrested for something I didn't do. So but those are all part of what I mean by that.
No, absolutely. I thank you for that and for the courage it takes to speak about it. It's not easy. I get it. so you've been out 14 years.
Sure.
I got two questions. Did it get easier to transition?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last thing.
Through the years, like, can you milestone for the people that are just getting out and aren't feeling like this is ever going to end? How, like, can you walk us through the 14 years? Like, did it get easier? What one was the hardest? Have you gotten to a point where you're comfortable? Like, you feel like a citizen rather than a returning citizen?
Sure. So initially, my first couple of years, I would say that I got overwhelmed very easily. For example, when I would go shopping, there were so many different products and different prices and so many options. I mean, there were times when I had the items I had half of my shopping cart filled up, but I couldn't keep making decisions. I just pushed the cart away from me, literally. So I'm going to come back another time. This is too much. So that was an example of even getting junk mail was, you know, bothered me. Just getting, you know, why are they contacting me? Even having to go and get my own mail. So it was that and things like nightmares. And I used to have nightmares frequently. And sometimes I couldn't quite believe that I had actually been incarcerated. And it's still other times I couldn't believe that I was really, that I was home. There were, you know, triggers were much more intense. And I really felt like I didn't belong out here because the culture was different. The technology was different. So GPS, internet, cell phone, these things had been created while I was incarcerated. So and cities and neighborhoods looked different, and different people now lived in those neighborhoods. So taken cumulatively, it felt like I was in a parallel universe. So it was hard to even decide what I wanted to do and in what order in a given day. because I felt like I was in a rush to try to hurry up and establish my life as quickly as I can, put as many things in order that I could so I could be on a par with somebody else my same age as me that had not been incarcerated, you know. But it became hard to even decide. I'd make a list of things so I didn't have to hold it in my head. But then I quickly, the list became kind of imposing, and that even that, the existence of a list became hard for me. So that was in the first couple years. I would say now I'm much different than when I was initially released. I don't really know how I was able to come and go as I did. I really was kind of in a fog. I would say that over the years I've broken prison thinking or prison habits. You know, so that helped, and I've learned a lot of technology. And so the more technology I've learned, the more tied into the world that I felt and the more normal it felt to be outside.
Nice. How many phones did you break? Don't mind me asking.
I don't mind you asking. I broke no phones, but I did lose phones. I lost two or three phones, and I was lucky initially. I was lucky just to be able to make a phone call or answering a phone. You had a flip phone, you just open it, but making a phone call and even using other functions on it that I regularly use now, for example, doing a Google search or using WhatsApp or sending a voice note or using an alarm or using the electronic calendar that's inside the phone or using the calculator. I couldn't do any of those things when I initially was released. So the phone posed a whole different set of problems. And whenever I would lose one, I became all frazzled because now I would have to lose a system that had a totally different operating system.
Yeah. No, I love your description of what you're going through. And when you talk about parallel universe, the way I relate it to is I feel like an alien. Like I feel like I'm holding this sign up, and it's just crazy listening to you speak about this, because exactly what you're going through, or what you went through, I'm going through. And I can only hope that, you know, down to the even how you describe catching up. You know, most people come out, they want to catch up with girls, drugs, partying, and everything else. Mine, like yours, is success. And I always compare myself to other successes going, well, this is where I should be at this age, and I'm 39 right now. I love your descriptions, though, of this, and it's very important that people out here know that. They think that – I know a lot of people in prison think that when they get out, their whole problem ceases to exist. And I've been talking to a lot of guys from prison lately and explained to them, if you think this is tough, wait till you get out. So not alone.
Sure, I'm glad you went there. There's a couple of points I want to just piggyback off of with you. Firstly, just even in terms of relationship, I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, women, and of course, you know, dating and is all a normal thing. But, you know, for me, one of the challenges that I experienced was, you know, I really, if I was attracted to somebody, I didn't understand how to approach. I mean, if you're in a nightlife place, or if you're on a beach, or you're walking on the sidewalk, or you're walking, if you're shopping, or, I mean, I used to have conversations with people, and they said, no, you meet people anywhere. Look, whatever I see somebody, you could see somebody in any of those places, and I would just go up to them and just talk, and I just would just feel kind of frustrated and frazzled, because I would be like, no, I can't do that. I almost need like a permission or a friendliness or some sort of interest on their end, even just to chat, because I don't want anybody to say that I made them feel uncomfortable and appearing unthreatening was something really, really important to me, because I didn't want to be misunderstood. I'll hold my next point for you to reply to that if you're going to comment, and then I want to say something else on a different point that you made.
Nice. So I deal with the same issue. Well, of course, I'm married, but it's the same issue as just communicating with people. And where my belief comes from is because I've been conditioned not to talk to COs. I talk to inmates just fine, but talking to anybody outside of that category, I have issues with that, because it's over familiarity. You get in trouble for it. It's frowned upon. And so it's kind of, and through 20 years in prison, it's conditioned me not to talk to anyone outside of that circle. And I, to this day, I still have issues with that. So go ahead.
Yeah, so the next part of it, in terms of thinking, when you mentioned that people on the inside that are incarcerated, that they think their problems are going to be over once they're released. So speaking to that point for a minute, I experienced that while I was in prison and working towards my freedom and, you know, daydreaming about being free, I had this, in my mind, I had this idealized life that I thought that I was coming home to. I thought that I would live in the city or town that I wanted to live in. I would live in the dwelling, whether it was an apartment or a house. I would live where I wanted to live at. I thought that I would very easily be able to obtain gainful employment, and that the pay level, the pay and position that I would get would be the same place that I would have been at had I not been incarcerated. So if I would have, at that physical age, have moved up to mid-level, I thought I was going to start out at mid-level. I used to see, like, movies, amusement parks, and other countries, like, all being advertised on television. I think, yeah, I want to go here. I'd like to travel. I'd like to go here and do there. And what comes with that, the prerequisites to that, planning it out, having the money to do it, even people to do it with, because it's boring in general for me to do things by myself. So I thought that those things all went without saying. And I thought that in terms of employment, not only did I think I'd be in a position where I would be if I hadn't been locked up and that it would be gainful employment, but I also thought that it would be something meaningful, something that would make a difference. And yeah, that's the best type of employment to have, but you seldom are able to just walk into that. That's a process with networking and getting job experience. That doesn't go by without saying by any means. And even just in terms of socializing, I thought it would go without saying that I would have people to socialize and did things with, because I did in prison. That was certainly easy enough. But life out here doesn't work that way. And I struggled in all of those areas. And I also noticed that most people who have never been incarcerated, they really don't seem to be committed to living a balanced life. So, you know, I firmly believe, I know that adults can have fun. We can have recreation. So I'm thinking, well, harkening back to my life in prison, recreation was every other night was from 7 until 10. So I was thinking, well, why can't I have recreation out here in the free world from 7 to 10? Like, I can do that and balance my responsibilities and obligations and goals. But most people out here really weren't thinking that way. They weren't organizing their life in that type of fashion. You know, they'd come home, they would make dinner, watch an hour of television, and get ready to go to bed so they can get up and do the same thing all over again. So, you know, that was all very frustrating.
And it's funny you say that, because I'm in current talks with CDCR right now about I call it a realistic reentry program, because everything they set me up for was that I fell on my face. There, nothing was realistic about the reentry that they were saying that I had to settle for or that I had to strive for. And today, going through this, you know, there's other aspects to it. Like, for instance, you talk about the PTSD. I know a lot of people out here don't know that, but I could count on two hands how many times I go in the refrigerator since I've been home. I get to count on one hand how many times I've actually wanted to go outside. How many times that I've been able to just go in, I've gone to my pantry 3 times to get something to eat. And there's this thing that just stops me from doing it. And it's like almost as if I'm waiting for somebody to tell me when to eat, what I can and can't get. You know, there's no store list that you make once a month out here. It doesn't work that way. You're going grocery shopping every week. So, the realistic reentry, though, is very important.
I want to build off of the point that you just made, and, you know, tied into that, you know, I was, like, unsure even of what was even, like, allowed or not allowed. So, for example, I remember once someone had invited me to dinner, and I didn't like how the meal came out, and the person I was eating dinner with was trying to explain to me that I was allowed to send it back, and they would take it off of the bill, and I could order something different, you know, and that was, you know, part of the social moray. That was, you know, an allowable thing out here. But to me, the waiter was in a position of authority, which the only thing I could relate that to was a corrections officer. And if a corrections officer that I worked for while I was in food service, if any of those people, you know, were to give me something extra to eat, you know, you wouldn't dare send something back or try to say, I don't like that, or you wouldn't dare do anything other than eat the whole damn thing and thank you. But it took like 15, 20 minutes, you know, of this person eating dinner, explaining it to me, and at the Five Ways of Sunday, and once you concluded what she was saying, I said, okay, I understand, but I'm still not sending it back.
Yeah. No, I have the same issue. Oh, wow. No, reentry is so many dimensions to it that, and, you know, and let me give everybody a background on me. I don't know about yours, Jeffrey, but from what I could tell, it's pretty similar. I educated myself in prison. I had this philosophy that I'm not getting ready to get out of prison. I'm getting ready to stay out of prison. Even before, I think, like 10 years out, I was like, I'm going to prepare myself to stay out of prison. I'm never coming back here. And that's the attitude we have to have. But with the tools that they were giving, they were inadequate. You know, they didn't tell us about this stuff. They didn't tell me that I was going to suffer from PTSD. So it's kind of just been a live and learn. And at Legacy Programs, we've been exploring this, and that's why we offer our mentor program and everything else. But with what you're doing right now, how do you address those things? How do you assist others to understand?
Sure. So in terms of my background first, I mean, while I was incarcerated, like you, I decided to utilize the time that I had. So I got the GED, and I completed the associate's degree and completed another year towards a bachelor's at the time that funding was cut for college education for prisoners, which is very unfortunate because the recidivism rate for college-educated prisoners is significantly lower than the 68% national recidivism rate. When they did that, I mean, I turned to a lot of the vocational trades. So I learned to type. I took computer repair. I did general business, which pertains to utilization of the computer in the workforce. I completed plumbing, painting. I took a class on how adults learned, and I worked as a teacher's aide, helping other prisoners working on trying to obtain GED and even adult basic education. There are a lot of people that couldn't do simple math or writing. So I did those things. And then from 1998 to 2006, I read 3 or 4 nonfiction books a week. You know, so I did educate myself quite a bit. But in terms of dealing with the issues that I spoke about, which was the other part of your question, so the answer is a variety of things. One of them was that I went to mental health professionals. I used to go to counseling at 4 times a week. I did that for close to 6 years. And I did try to learn a little bit of technology each day to kind of feel tied, to try to feel tied more tied in. And I did break different habits. So like I would force myself, if I was in a restaurant, I would force myself to sit down in a seat where the back is to everybody rather than looking for the chair where your back's against the wall. So I did do that. And I think just the passage of time helped quite a bit as well. And that's how I address those. And then also there is a game that I co-own called Recharge Beyond the Bars Reentry Game, which formerly incarcerated people with reestablishing ties with their friends and family, because it is awkward, it is difficult. One time my brother said to me, he said, I'm not sure what to say, I don't know what not to say, I don't know what to ask, I'm not sure what not to ask. So Recharge kind of steps in the middle, and for me, it was hard for me to communicate, so Recharge steps in the middle and removes that awkwardness through icebreaker-type questions.
Nice. And, you know, I've heard good things about your game. How do we get it?
Yeah, so the website is rechargethegame.com, and offline you can text me your address, and, you know, well, I'll defend one, and maybe we'll do an episode that focuses a little bit on that after you've played it a little bit.
Nice. I'd love that. Thank you so much. You know, it's crazy. So I just got my driver's license the other day, and I've been, I got a good support. I posted it on LinkedIn, and I got almost 100,000 views, and all these comments that people congratulating me and stuff like that. It's a hashtag comeback, the comeback kid. And so I just want to say that, you know, the support that we get out here is so essential on the permanency, not just the successfulness, but permanency. As you know, Jeffrey, we don't try to give people 6 months, a year. We want them out for good, right? So,
100%. I mean, that's one of the things that really frustrated me a lot. While I was inside, I, you know, saw a lot of people back and forth 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And you know, that always really frustrated me. And some of the common things, as I think back about it, that many people told me that was the same as what other people said, was they said things like, I was never able to get hired. You know, it always came down to my record. People were always discriminating. I would get job offers, and then when they would discover what I was in, that I had been incarcerated, the offer was pulled, or I had gotten hired, and then they fired me when I found out I had a record. So I heard that a lot. I heard things like, well, the parole officer really didn't like me, and he was looking for just anything at all, any excuse he could use to send me back. And sometimes people would be sent back for technical violations, something like you're supposed to be home at 8 o'clock and you actually got home at 8:10, and now they were back for a year or for 2 years. I mean, that was, you know, that made no sense to me, and I was really determined, no matter what, I was not coming back. And, you know, and some people said, well, I had to support my family, so I started resorting back to selling drugs. And I just saw how short-sighted that was, because once you do that, if you get caught, you get sent back to prison to do another sentence. Who's going to support your family then? So that was really a short-sighted thing. And I kind of hearken that as a lesson in a way. Like when I was in prison, I played chess. I learned how to play chess. And in order to be successful when you're playing chess, in order to win or even be in the game, you have to think ahead. So I kind of have a philosophy of thinking ahead in life and thinking, well, if I make this move, what's the continuation? What's the response move? What's the answer? What's that line of actions likely to culminate in? And so I, you know, think and evaluate things before I do them. And I think that that's a positive way that people can try to navigate being outside and what actions. And so many people went back into the same neighborhoods, back with the same friends. And I see that as a problem. I mean, if your friends are doing something positive, that's one thing. But if they're not, they're just hanging out in the corner. They're doing the same thing they're doing before, no advancement, into negative things, breaking laws here and there. That's the wrong way. That's the wrong way to go. You're setting yourself up for failure. You have to be around people that are doing well, that are about positive things.
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
I just want to let you know, we have 3 new callers. Can you please state your name? 9464-7636.
I think.
Hi, Stephanie. I was on mute.
Oh,
what is it?
Hi, this is Stephanie Lopez.
Hi, Stephanie. Do you want to provide some feedback or have some questions or comments?
No, I was actually just calling in to actually share my daughter's story.
I
just barely got home, and I just barely got off, so I wasn't really able to hear the whole topic and the whole conversation. I'm sorry. Hi, Sparky. How are you?
No, it's all right. Jeffrey, you still have time, right?
Yeah, I can give another 10 minutes.
Okay, Stephanie, can you hang on for 10 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So Stephanie,
I want to point out, you know, another aspect of reentry, you know, I'm sorry, just another point I want to point out, everything is not on the formerly incarcerated person. You know, I want to point out that there is a lot of adjustments that have to be made in family and friends where the person's returning to. You know, like I've talked to a lot of, as I know a lot of people on parole, and, you know, part of the adjustment is, say, a father's coming back home, but they've been out of the child's life 10, 15 years, other than what limited interaction has happened in the visiting room, and that's just during a limited amount of time. So, you know, a wife has to get used to the husband being back in the life of the child. Now it's a two-parent household rather than a one-parent household, or, you know, if you're moving back with your mother or your father, your parents, and maybe they don't live in the same neighborhood anymore. So, you know, they got to get used to you living there, and you would have to get used to living in another place. So there are all those other things that other people have to navigate. And when I've come across a lot of members of my extended family over the years, and really by now, having been home 14 years, I feel like we're kind of like in a good place. But, you know, initially when I would have some conversations, it would just be me and one other person. Sometimes, you know, they had felt like a type of guilt on their end. You know, Dad, I'm sorry I didn't really keep in contact with you. You know, so there was a type of collective guilt that went through people that we had to deal with as well. And, you know, I might have thought that I didn't hold anything against anybody, but when the conversation came up, or sometimes I'd feel certain feelings after interacting with people, and it was something really to deal with.
Oh, yeah. No, I went through the same thing. My first 3 months home were, oh, my. I didn't think about the discipline part of being a father. I thought I was going to come home and just hang out and be a friend, and I didn't realize what comes with fatherhood stepping into this role. And I got a 12-year-old son, and it was not the easiest transition, let me tell you, on either end. Me coming in and just all of a sudden we got rules, and we have these me coming in with my cleaning schedule, and I can't even – that's a whole nother show, really. But, you know, that's one of the things I love about legacy programs is that we deal with the family members, not just the incarcerated, and we offer that communication. And it's one of the joys of what I do. It's just sometimes – I mean, do you ever feel like you give all of yourself and you have nothing left? Like, do you practice self-care?
Yeah, sure, I do. I struggle with that. I struggle with that. I mean, I'm really all in on my advocacy work, but, you know, it's hard sometimes for me to set limits, and sometimes I feel like I overextend myself for people. But then if I need something myself, you know, one minor thing or another, there's always a lot of reasons and excuses why something can't be done. So I do feel like in that area of just, you know, just giving and giving and giving, that and having nothing left for myself, I do struggle a little bit with that.
Okay. And do you have for the people starting with advocacy, do you have a message for them from your experience?
Yeah, doing advocacy work is extremely important. It's healing. It's cathartic. It makes a difference. It makes your suffering count for something. It's a way of giving back. So I encourage people to do that. I believe that that's the better path, as opposed to just trying to put everything behind you or forget about it. You know, I mean, there are people still in the same position that we were all once in. At the same time, I do think it's important for people to set limits, particularly when you first come home and you don't have doing speaking engagements, it was one of the few ways I was able to earn any money. I mean, most ways of making money were closed to me because I was always passed over for gainful employment. I didn't have work experience, you know, and there was the stigmas that I spoke about. So when people wanted me to, you know, come and speak all over the place and, you know, not pay anything, and I just had to say, look, I'm sorry, but this is one of the few ways I have to make money. And I can't just come and do that for free because I'm undercutting my own market, and soon everybody's going to want me to come everywhere, and I'm not even going to have that. So, you know, I hope that one day when I'm in a more affluent position that I can come and do this, or, you know, but other than that, maybe there's a different way that you can partner with other people, but I have to earn a living. And that's one of the things that I feel that a common complaint that I get from formerly incarcerated people, which I think is legitimate, is that these civilians, and we'll define civilian as anybody involved in criminal justice reform who is not themselves personally formerly incarcerated, you know, it's somehow seen as legitimate for every civilian, you know, to want to earn a living, to be able to get paid for their work, including doing advocacy, but at simultaneously the work of formerly incarcerated people often is not valued monetarily. I mean, you know, we're often asked to go everywhere and do everything for free on the house because it's a good cause, but meanwhile everyone else is actually getting jobs and making careers of it. But, you know, hiring someone formerly incarcerated is seen as an unnecessary expense, and I'd like to see that change.
Oh, no, absolutely. I had to go get a job just to keep doing what I'm doing. I got a job as a kitchen manager, and that was, let me tell you, you know, what people don't take into account is the advocacy. It's such a noble cause and purpose, but there's no money in this. Let me tell you that right now. There's no, you're doing pretty much everything for free. And, you know, if it wasn't for the gracious donors that I've had, you know, and I want to thank them all publicly for what they do, because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to pay my phone bill. I wouldn't be able to have my internet and stuff like that to do what I do. So,
can I jump in on this one?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Can I jump in on this one for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So with the advocacy and stuff like that, like I value you guys. I'm a mother out here fighting and struggling, and I wouldn't have gone anywhere where I am today without any of you guys. And I 100% fully donate to every for-profit organization that works with me, because they are amazing. And people don't realize that you guys are needed, and so they need you. And we're lost without you. So I 100% am for donating to organizations like your organization. They are very, very needed out here for families and communities, and especially for reentry. Absolutely. I'm so afraid of the way my daughter's going to come home. And that's just all I wanted to touch bases on that one.
So I do want to add that while I agree generally that there's, you know, in terms of there being money in the field or not, I mean, none of us are in this for the money, but that having been said, I just want to point out that there are nonprofit organizations that do this work, and they have salary slots, and some of them are really well-funded. They have a really good donor base and stream of revenue.
Right.
And I'm saying that too many times they hire people to do work, but they won't hire formerly incarcerated people. We want people to travel all over the place as opposed to hiring them as for some of those staff positions, or even if it's not a staff position. I mean, when I collaborated a lot with New Yorkers Against the Death Penalty, for example, they knew what my financial position was. And so they would cover my travel costs. And if I had to travel more than 2.5 hours, they would cover my lodging. And they knew that I had to eat out, because the only reason why I wasn't eating at home is because I'm out on this mission working with them. And so they paid for that. And they also gave me an honorarium for speaking, you know, and helping them with their cause. But I'm saying that there's too many organizations that don't do that. That not only do people not get paid anything, even though we're struggling, but we're also expected to come out of our own pocket, even in terms of transportation or lodging or eating something. And you know, like I'm going to call out prosecutors or cops or judges or public defenders if they do something wrong. I got to call out my own community on that aspect of it. I'm not going to look the other way on anything.
Yeah. Well, man, this is a good conversation. You're absolutely right, though. It's like I say, we have several clients that I work with, and it's not an easy thing. It's very time consuming, but you know what? At the end of the day, it's what's necessary and what's needed out here. And I can't see myself doing anything else really, except for maybe a kitchen job. So, I got to pay the bill somehow, right? But
yeah, absolutely.
You guys.
Sure.
But
did you get a
Jeffrey,
little experience
amazing.
In the kitchen?
Yes, I used to work in the kitchen in the prison. I ran a kitchen of 20 other people as a lead man. So, I mean, that's why, you know, prison experiences don't go unheard out here. That's one thing I've experienced, too, is that all the jobs I've had in prison, from HVAC to kitchen to porter to back dock worker, I just see how those things have helped me out here excel that make me stand out above everybody else. Because I was used to working for 8 cents an hour, if not free. And so to come out here and make $14, $15, I'm like, I'm rich. You know, what I'm making in 1 hour is what I made in a whole month. So you have like a sense of gratitude and appreciation. And that's what makes us hard workers. And any former inmate, I always encourage to hire, because we have a work ethic that's out of this world. So
Lauren,
you're not going to get any better. Yes.
Jeffrey has to go now. So do you want to just give him the closing for him?
Yes, please. Jeffrey, do you have any other thing you want to add, and also your contact information and your contact information for your card game?
Yes. So in terms of the contact information for Recharge Beyond the Bars Reentry Game, just the website is rechargethegame.com. In terms of my own contact, again, people can email me through the website, www.deskovic.org. That's DESKOVIC.org. There is a web form there. People can contact me that way. And they can also contact me through LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. And maybe my final comment will be just that getting home is only half of the battle. You know, establishing your life and clearing up and trying to clear up the after effects, adequately addressing the after effects of incarceration is, another process. Nobody goes from prison to just happily ever after it all in one shot. There's a lot of difficulties, and we need many people in society, whether it's old friends, family, new friends, to play a role. We need managers and business owners to open doors and give formerly incarcerated people a chance and on-the-job training. If we're going to just do job discrimination, we're making it more likely that people will wind up resorting back to their old ways of making money, which very likely can and result in them being incarcerated again. And if you're trying to, you know, I would say consistent contact was what I found to be the most beneficial, as opposed to somebody who just showed up once or twice and, you know, that was it. I mean, that gave me a sense of stability in an otherwise uncertain field. And I would encourage people to continue to embark on a advocacy career. And, you know, for people that are hiring on advocacy with respect to nonprofit organizations, to, you know, you need to hire some, you know, your staff should consist of at least some formerly incarcerated people. I'm not saying all, but some.
Nice. And can, you know, for as being one of the true advocates out there and one of the most sincere, can you give a little encouragement to the families out there? You got a message for the family members that are dealing with loved ones incarcerated?
Yes, I do. I would say it's really important to maintain contact, whether that's a letter, a phone call, occasionally a visit, some kind of way, maintain contact and, you know, have authentic communications. I mean, that was one thing that really limited me. I mean, when I did get visitors, when my mother did come to see me, I mean, I was always obsessed with how do I get out of prison. And other than that, everything was just surface level. There was nothing really meaningful exchanges. So that, and when people do come home, you have to be patient and understand they're dealing with a new world, new technology, new social mores, and their technology is different, and it's a struggle. So be patient and overlook and pull to the side and teach, and that's really, really, very valuable. And when you discover what your family members, what their interests or hobbies are, what they like to do for fun, if you can introduce them to other people that share some of those hobbies, that you can assist them with the social aspect of their lives. And, you know, that's really, really important.
Hey, I want to appreciate you, Jeffrey, and thank you so much for your words of wisdom, your experiences, and your victors, man. I really do appreciate it, and you're an inspiration to all of us.
Thank you very much, and I'll look forward to being on the show in the future. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. Have a good one. All right, so that was Jeffrey Desovich. I have a hard time with that last name. I'm sorry. We want to thank him for coming on and sharing his insight and perspective. It's very important and necessary. And our next guest is Stephanie. Stephanie, I'll let you introduce yourself because I don't know if you want to put your name out there or what, but welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. My name's Stephanie Lopez. Absolutely, I don't mind sharing my name. My fight's really strong, so... You know, I actually would like to put my name out there and say, hey, I'm a mother. If you've heard anything, seen anything, please reach out. Here's my number.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, thank you guys for having me. Yeah, my daughter's incarcerated. We spoke of this. My daughter's incarcerated. She's been incarcerated for 19 months now. She's facing... life, murder in the first degree, malice murder charges. They're trying to get her for life. She was actually involved in a gross vehicular DUI car accident. However, my daughter claims she wasn't the driver. And through the 19 months of us, and you know, researching and investigating and opening conversations up with others and whatnot, we've came to the conclusion with much, much evidence and much proof that my daughter was not the driver, as she claims. And we're having a really hard time, you know, getting the county to do their job properly. So my daughter's sitting in here. She's typically a really good, strong girl. She's a mother of two beautiful children. Sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Who I know are missing her dearly, but I know they're missing everybody else too. So since this has happened, we've been taken away from her kids as well. You know, both fathers retained custody of the children after the accident, and I don't know why they're being the way they are, but, you know, it's really sad because we were my daughter's kids' everything, and we haven't even spoken to my grandson in, like, 19 months, and we've barely gotten to have a relationship with my granddaughter. So my family's really torn because we're a super close family. Sorry. However, you know, I'm a really strong advocate for my daughter. I'm a really strong voice. I'm a mom that they want to shut up, but I can't shut up. You know, I'm a mom that doesn't have the money to go out and drop $50,000 on a lawyer, or my daughter would have been home already.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
What state are you in?
I'm in the state of California.
And how much time did she get?
They haven't even gone to court. They just barely started showing her evidence when the ACLU went in. So here's the situation. My daughter's story is a really disgusting, disgusting, dirty story. It's gone from, you know, the evidence is super, super clear. The evidence is just like seriously clear that the other girl was driving. It was the other girl's car. She has three prior off-record DUI car accidents that people are willing to testify about. She had a DUI dismissed 2 weeks after the accident. She has a current warrant for her arrest in Nevada for DUI. My daughter is a good girl. She doesn't have any prior charges. She didn't have any drugs or, you know, anything but the alcohol in her system that she drank when this girl and her went out for drinks for her birthday. The other girl was seen just moments before driving, and people have came forward and, you know, told them that. We're talking about a block and a half away. Then there was a Snapchat video that had the investigators gone after months ago. They probably would be able to retrieve it, but I don't know how it's going to, you know, how effective it's going to be for them to get it now.
Can
because
I ask
we're
you
19 a, months into the case.
Can I ask you a question? First of all, you don't want to put all that out there now if your daughter hasn't even gone to court yet, because a lot of that can be held. It can mess you up. I just want
you
know
what? It's already out there. Everything's already out there.
Where is she now?
Everything is already out there, and I do. She is in the Bob Weiser Detention Center, and I do understand that, you know, that is their defense. But the reason why I had to come forward was because her defense wasn't her defense. They are.
No,
they have not been defending her.
You said she's being held now. You said she's being held now in a county jail.
Yes, on no bail.
Can I ask a question?
Hold on, hold on. Leona, can Leona finish what she was saying real quick?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just wanted to find out. You said no bail. Does that mean she couldn't afford the bail, or they denied her bail?
She has absolutely zero bail, and nobody seems to understand why. She's never been in trouble in her life.
So they didn't allow bail for her?
No, absolutely zero bail.
Wow. Have you tried to get any pro bono legal assistance, or does she already have a court-appointed lawyer?
She has a court-appointed lawyer. This is her second one. She's tried to Marsden them. They've denied her.
Okay, so the one that she has now, what is he doing to try to help either get her out on bail or at least represent her?
Nothing now. Well, they did finally contact me at 9:30 p.m. the other night to start taking in some of the evidence that I've collected for them.
Oh, okay.
But it was at 9:30 at night.
That's okay. Somebody's gotten in touch with you. Thanks, Lawrence. I wanted to find out if she was able to get out on bail or not.
No, absolutely.
No, she'll what's happening in this situation with my daughter is just unbelievable. It's like one of those true, oh my gosh, is this really happening stories. My daughter's, I have like legit proof that this girl was driving. I have text messages from her stating that she was the driver. My daughter, my stepdaughter came, you know, was sitting in the hospital when my daughter received a phone call from her the following day. You know, my daughter asked, why am I in trouble? You were driving. And she says, I know, sweetie, get some rest. We'll take care of it later. No, I mean, there's multiple, like the evidence is so clear. There's so much proof that my daughter wasn't driving. And it's.
What is your first name? Sharon?
My first name is Stephanie.
Stephanie. You know, there's 2.3 million people in prison, and I'll tell you, your daughter's situation is not isolated. There's so many like her. But the fortunate thing is right now she does have a pro bono legal attorney, and he did call
her. No. She has a public defender.
That is
she
a pro bono.
She does not have a pro bono.
Pro bono is when she doesn't have to pay. So she does have a pro bono. Okay, so I was just curious. They did contact you, and that's a good sign right there.
But that's okay. So,
yeah.
Ma'am, I just mean to step in here and tell you that our situation it's not a good thing. Like it's not good when they can't contact us. They are not fighting for my daughter. Okay, they are trying to. There is no fight there for my daughter at all. There has not been any fight there for my daughter. The only reason why they contacted me recently was because the ACLU had to go in and support my daughter because of her breasts are being neglected, and so is her medical care.
She had went in with a brain bleed. She has absolutely no medical care since she was arrested 19 months ago. And she has severe headaches and severe nauseous and severe dizziness and fainting spells. She had gone in and she had a positive breast exam. And they have neglected her, even though she's continuously told them, listen, I have breast cancer that runs in my family at severe, rapid pace. Okay, so now that the ACLU had to stand up and fight for my daughter to get her breast checked, she doesn't just have one mass. Her breast is covered with mass. So it's not, there's nobody fighting for my daughter but me right now. And anybody, you know, anybody that follows her story on the outside, like these advocates. I have these advocates that stand up and fight for me. You know, they hear my story. They help us. They reach out. They, you know, and it is very much so important to have advocates in your office that are, you know, that have done the prison time, that have learned from the inside. They do know what happens in those walls. You know, my daughter's story is not, my daughter's story is different from a lot of people's, but
no,
yet
let
at the
me,
same
let
time,
me,
I'm learning that it's not.
Can I explain something to you? First of all, I founded New Vision Organization in 2004. We advocated for the men, women, and youth nationwide. We helped them with everything.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I have a New Vision Organization right now in Massachusetts that advocates for the first-time offenders serving life and life without parole. I've been doing this for 24 years now. I've been working with men.
Thank you.
And I'll tell you, your daughter, her case is not isolated. But the sad thing about it is it's a shame that so many people like your daughter and others, men, women, and youth, have to go through this BS because of these legal advocates who don't want to do anything. But they will be the first ones to be out there when someone commits suicide. They will be the first ones to be out there when there's media attention or when they can get in these coalitions where they can put themselves out there so everybody thinks they're doing something. They get paid by the hour. So they rather put those hours into the media and into these coalitions so that they're getting paid for the easy stuff while people are dying left and right. I had three prisoners in Pennsylvania, and I brought this up so many times. You're lucky that ACLU went to see you because so many times ACLU has said they don't have the funds or they don't have the resources like all these others. Three prisoners, one after the other. I contacted ACLU before each one of them died, begging them to go into the prisons because these people were being abused. After each one of them died, I begged them before the next one died. And then the next one. This is what I think about the legal system. No one can tell me about the legal system because I've been doing this too long. I have a loved one myself that's been suffering like heck, and nobody wants to do anything about it. Your daughter's situation is not an isolated situation. Let me tell you, my sister, that these situations are happening all over this country. I interview Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, who talks about it all the time. She's familiar with the prisons in the U.S. She advocates for prisoners in the U.S. She also is in the Netherlands. They talk about the differences between the U.S. prisons and the prisons in her country. Franz Kurz from Germany talks about the differences between their prisons in Germany compared to the prisons in the United States, mass incarceration, vengeance, hate, everything you name it. This is what we have in this country. Your daughter's situation is not isolated, and I feel bad for her, but don't feel like you're alone.
You know, I was actually going to say, you know, it's, you know, it sounds like a true Dateline story, you know, what my daughter's going through and whatnot. And I have to say that once I started fighting for my daughter, what disgusts me is you're right. She's not an isolated story. There is so many people that are going through so much disgust and just wrong and learning, you know, just, you know, girls from the jail that my daughter's in, they reach out to me and they're like, hey, you know, my daughter told me that you're, you know, fighting for her, da-da-da-da-da, and that this was her, this happened to her, but I have to tell you that I have the same lawyer, and he did the same exact thing to me. So how many more was there that he did that to, that he, you know, he played them out and played them out up until the day before a prelim, and then dismissed himself from the case? How many more girls did he do that to? How many more males did he do that to? How many more people did he, you know, how much taxpayers' money was wasted by him just holding off these court cases and not doing anything with them and then stepping out the day before court. I mean, the day before prelim. You know, if there was two that are connected, how many more were there? It just, you know, it makes me, it upsets me. They're being paid to fight. Get up and fight. Do your job.
You're going to be an excellent advocate because you started out just like I did 25 years ago. But I will say that the law schools, there's a lot of these law schools, clinics, transactional clinics that will work on cases like your daughter. But right now, we don't even know what's going to happen to her because she really hasn't even gone to trial. But once
yeah,
she does,
and
right now.
And at this point, she is a client of Legacy Programs. So we're doing everything we can, and we have lawyers and associates of lawyers that can help with this situation. So I've kind of been advised to, because she's actually listening right now, and she has some input. So I'll give her your information, Stephanie, and then you could talk to her further. Yeah, no, absolutely. But I just want to make sure that you don't incriminate yourself, that there's not too much information put out there, and I get that you want to vocalize on this, but I for her security and safety, I would advise that we leave the details kind of, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Right.
So
the only reason why I had to start throwing out details, and I didn't for a long time, I stayed silent for a long time, and then finally I went to my local police department, and I went to the chief of police, and I said, if one of your community members like me brought this forward and this was happening in your within your police department and your community, what would you want somebody to do in this situation? And, you know, he told me what he would like to happen if it was in his community. But he said, but, you know, of course he can't give me any legal, you know, illegal advice or whatever. But he did kind of say, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And that's what I had to do, was like there was no doubt in my mind that the only way I was going to get anybody to hear my daughter's innocence was I was going to have to step up and say, hey, you know what? Pay attention, because this is not okay, and this is in your community, and you're charging my daughter with something, and that's, you know, you're charging her with malice murder when in reality you're letting the malice murderer go. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say it like that, because I truly actually pray for the girl all the time, but the evidence is so, so clear, and it's not okay, you know?
Hi, I'm a guest. I was actually listening to your story, and I wanted to say that, you know, sometimes silence is golden, because when, you know, you want to rock and roll at the same time, but, you know, sometimes you got to rock. You got to stay put and let God be God. Let him handle the fights and the things that are going on, because, you know, your story's not uncommon. You know,
right.
You said you have
right.
It's very nasty. I understand that. I get that. I get that all the time. You know, I cross-reference with people with similarities. But, you know, silence is golden, you know, and just keep praying, keep holding on, and hold strong, hold true, no compromise, and know that, you know, God's going to prevail in this. You're going to be fine.
Yes,
thank you, guys. And we will have an associate of our lawyer's department contact you with some – all they can do is advise. They can't represent, but they could give you some legal advice if you'd like that.
Right,
so,
absolutely. We'll take any help that we can get, honestly. Any advice.
Amazing.
But,
Thank you guys
for supporting our communities, too. You know, we need you guys.
Always. And do you have a website where people can reach you at, or any contact information where if they do want to get in touch to help?
I do. You know, I do this. I do have a Facebook page for my daughter. It's called I Will Stand for Rebecca. It's been up for, you know, about 16 months, and we've almost lost it a few times. Every time we reach out for evidence or post, you know, that we're looking for a certain person on there because we know that you have certain evidence or something like that, we get shut down. And this time I think we might be shut down for good, because I haven't been able to get in, and it says it's going to expire in like 17 days. But other than that, you can reach me through Sparky, the Legacy Program. Absolutely. And he and my, you know, I don't mind giving out my phone number if that's, you know, you guys can have my number, and if anybody wants to reach me or contact me, you guys are more than welcome to share my number.
Okay. No, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
So the whole point of letting people get their voice out and stuff like that, it's very essential into today's criminal justice because there's a healing process involved. And so if anyone was just sitting here wondering what the hell are they talking about, that's just what we do. You know, I offer guests to speak. They could yell, scream, curse. It doesn't matter. But I just want to say that we try to offer solutions to problems on here. So like I said, if anybody has any information or if anybody wants to reach out to help, assist, and aid, feel free to do so with the contact information that Stephanie gave, or you can just go under legacyprograms.net for the information right there, or legacyprogramseducation@gmail.com, as well as cblegacyprograms@gmail.com. So I just want to thank everybody. And then... So,
thank you.
Absolutely. And is there anything
else
you'd like to add, Stephanie?
Thank you guys for having me, for sure. Absolutely. If there's anybody out there that can help me, help assist me in filing for grandmother rights, I've tried numerous times, and, you know, it's a sticky situation with the Tulare County. The courthouse absolutely does not like me. When I walk up, they lock the doors, literally. I'm not allowed inside the courthouse. Every time I've attempted to file for visitation on my grandkids, it's been rejected for some form or another. So if anybody knows how to properly file paperwork and get it e-filed, with all the windows, you know, that's another problem we're having with the court system. Like, all the windows are shut down due to COVID, so... us most, you know, a lot of people that's coming out into reentry doesn't, you know, they don't know all the computer work and the electronics and stuff. And even myself, I wasn't an electronic person, and now I need to e-file stuff, and I'm clueless. So, you know, if anybody knows how to do that and can support me in that, I would definitely love to see my grandbabies.
Oh, I absolutely know somebody that will do that. And also, so I tried doing a wellness check on Rebecca, and I got shut down on the website as well. So if anyone's thinking, like, oh, this is conspiracy theory, no.
Her attorney, actually, they had called me the other day and said, you know, we're going to have to just go in and see her, because every time we try to video chat with it, they just boot us out and scramble it. Her mail is returned when people write her. Her mail is withheld. Like, my dad ordered her a law book to be able to fight for herself inside, and it was held. It was received, but it was held for like a week until we called and made, you know, demanded, like, this is not okay. And then every time, like, she gets on the phone with us, you know, my daughter's locked down 23 and a half. She was locked down 23 and a half hours a day. Now that the ACLU has gone in, she's got 22 and a half hours a day lockdown. So she's got 2 hours out. But now my daughter's to the point to where she's too afraid to even go out and make phone calls is what's happening. Because of her fighting, now the correctional officers are, like, intimidating the, you know, antagonizing the inmates, and then inmates are antagonizing her and stuff like that. It's just a really sad situation. It's not okay what's happening.
No, not at all. And I know what you're talking about, because as a former incarcerated, I know their tactics, and anytime you file a grievance or you buck the system, this is what they do. They put hurdles and discourage you to the point where you just give up and settle. So,
yes,
and we're fully
exactly what they're doing. But, you know, every time they come in with something, they bring more evidence that shows her innocence. And I don't understand why they don't just, like, this is not okay.
But, you know, it's Stephanie, right?
Yes.
There's ways to, you know, when God is good, right, there's ways to that things get handled in a miraculous way. And, you know, we can't all explain it, but there's someone out there listening that, you know, that's to your story, that is evidence that basically, to sum this up, is it's going to get taken care of in the right manner. But, you know, when we try to put, when we try to put our, in, you know, that, and that's what Legacy does. You know, their Legacy program is a helpful, what Lawrence has explained to me, you know, and listening in this content every Sunday, that, you know, they have the special touches, the buttons, you know, that can understand where you've been, what's going on, you know, in a proper means on how to file that or how to talk to somebody or who to talk to, you know, and it, you know, we all teach each other. So in this, in that sense, it, you know, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate, you know, to hear what your situation is, but it brings awareness to that. Now, do we call, do we not call, do we write our Congress, do we not write our Congress, do we write our government?
Oh,
do
I write everybody.
You know what I mean? And that's just it. We have to take back, you know, these people are getting paid regardless on what they say or what they do, no matter if they do something or not.
But they are
doing something, but it's in the wrong, it's in a different manner. You know, a different mannerism, and they're getting paid for it. And we have to put it into that. We have to be the voice. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Nice.
I will stand and fight for my daughter 100%. You know, there's no doubt in my mind. I've given them opportunity. They've asked me to go silent at times. I give them my silence, you know, and then they would go in and they would tell my daughter, oh, well, you're looking at this, you're looking at that, da, 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 here's the evidence they have against you. No, why don't you look at the evidence that we have against them? We clearly know the evidence that you have against her, but her story matches the evidence. And everything matches her story. And that you guys, I have to just tell you, the evidence is so clear. And if you go look at her page, like I said, it's I Will Stand for Rebecca. Go look at her page. You have like 17 days to see the evidence on that one. And then, but you can also, you know, add yourself to any of us that comment on there. We'll be more than happy to share with you guys updates. We're going to create a new page, but we have to do, you know, we have to be able to have the time to sit down and do that. It's been a fight. It's been a fight. We've set up GoFundMe's, okay? Our GoFundMe has been shut down every single time because the girl reports it as fraud. Okay, so we get shut down and our GoFundMe's don't go anywhere. Anything that we try to do, we get railroaded. My daughter gets on the phone to call home. Anytime we start talking about what she needs to do, her rights or anything like that, oh, she needs to go back to her cell and turn, take that picture down off her wall. So even if she asks her roommate to go do it, they say, no, disconnect your phone, call and go take that picture off your wall. Okay, my daughter only has a limited time out there to make those phone calls to let her family know she's safe. Okay,
yeah.
So you're going to interrupt her phone call for a picture on her wall of her kids or something? You know?
And one of the things that we call that in, from a prison perspective is rogue procedures, and it's called reprisal and just intimidation. So, you know, just have her keep filing. So we're coming up to an end right now, and I want to sit there and I love your story. I'm so sorry, and we will do everything we can to help.
Yes,
so we have I want to do a recap on the show today. But first, I want to next week we have Mr. Tillery. He will be the next guest, and he will be talking about how the government took over $3 million, his home from him, and everything else. It's a really tragic story, and it needs to be heard so you can get some assistance out there. The following week, we will have George Floyd's family on, and they will be talking about just social injustice of what everything's going on, and you're going to be surprised of their perspective on everything. We work with her, and she's a wonderful mother, wonderful advocate, and just a very bright, intelligent woman. And so we will be talking about that. And then I don't know when we're going to have my wife on to talk about the reentry, the struggles of a prison wife, and the struggles of a reentry wife. So we will that will be to be continued, I guess. But, you know, what? So if I can get everybody's perspective, I believe Christine's on, Brady's on, I believe Stephanie, you're still on, and Leona. What did you guys think about today's guests and the stories we heard today? Leona, you want to go first?
I thought it was excellent. You always do a good show on Sunday, Lawrence, and I really enjoy listening to it. I love every time Jeffrey comes on because he has such a story to tell, too. And I say it all the time, for you and for your brother Brady, for you to grow up in the environment you have in foster homes and separated and everything else, you've done an excellent job. You went into prison. You came out. You brushed yourself off and went right ahead. And one of the things I have to admire, too, is the fact that both your wife, Samantha, and also Brady's wife, Christine, you've just been a good team. You've been an awesome team. I enjoyed listening to, not in a good way, but in a way with Stephanie, with her story, because it's so many mothers like her are going through so much with their loved ones inside. In her case, her daughter is innocent, and I know it's difficult for her, but at the same time, she's going to be stronger. Somebody mentioned the Bible. The Bible, it says in the Bible, our trials and tribulations make us stronger, and it makes us stronger so that we can be a benefit to others. And it's a clear example with you, Lawrence, how far you've come. And I want Stephanie to know, your daughter, right now she's going through some difficult times, some serious trials and tribulations. But you have Lawrence that's going to be helping you through his legacy program. And there's a lot of other resources out there that we can try to work with you on as well in getting these resources to you through Lawrence. And just hang in there. Be strong.
Thank you. We are. And, you know, I just have to say thank you on that because – you know, that's one thing that my daughter is my daughter is a true God-seeking God child. And, you know, thankfully she is that child of God because her strength that she has in there, she says, Mom, I know that he's doing this for a reason. He's doing this for a purpose because I know that even though I was the driver, I still have responsibility for somebody losing their life because she does take responsibility as well. And so she does accept the punishment that she is getting, but she does not think that it is right for the person that actually took the life and that is so close to doing it again, you know? And I've asked the police themselves through conversations when they called and they apologized to me. The police department has called and apologized to me and said, we really hope that you can understand how we possibly could have made that mistake. And I said, I do. However, there's so much that we'll have to go into more details. I know we're so much on the thing. There's so much that you guys would love to hear about this story. Like I said, look at her page. Today's topic, you guys, when I jumped on, I didn't get to hear much of it, but I did, you know, reentry reform is something that is so, it needs to be touched. That basis needs to be touched. People need help when they come home. It is hard for people. I've seen it. So, yeah. You know, that's something I would like to be a big part of too as well. And I appreciate all the help that you guys give me.
And the greatest thing about Legacy Programs is that I'm also part of a New Vision organization based out in Massachusetts with Leona, and I'm the motivational speaker, consultant, and advocate. So me and Leona will put our heads together on this in New Vision organization, see what we could do for you as well. But I just want to say that if also for visits, I wanted to point this out, for visits for Rebecca as a clergy, they did block me. But they also charge $15 for a visit. So
what?
If anyone wants to make for a video visit, it's $15. So if anybody wants to make donations so we could do clergy visits and check up on her in video, please, I ask for all the help that we can get. It's ridiculous that they're making money off of visits that should be, they say it's a privilege. So, I just wanted to point that out. And also, there's also a GoFundMe for Stephanie. Please look that up if anybody wants to help and assist.
No, we don't have a GoFundMe. We've just taken down. We just have given up on the GoFundMes and whatnot. You know, because every time we post the GoFundMe, the other girl that was involved in the accident, the one that owned the car, she has us shut down on everything.
Oh. My apologies.
I'll be in contact with Legacy later today and. So we'll go ahead
maybe
and take
we
care
should
of
get a GoFundMe going through the Legacy program or something, but, you know, have
yeah,
them be.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. For right now, if anybody wants to donate for Stephanie, they could also go through Legacy programs, and I'll make sure that the funds get to Stephanie, of course.
Thank you.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's what we do. So I just want to say, you know, thank you so much for your story. And, Mr. Brady, did you have anything to say about the guest? Or the conversation today?
I'm gonna say with Leona, same thing. Basically, when Jeffrey got on at, you know, his comment of when he brought up the, you know, when you're coming out and trying to, you know, sort through everything and trying to, you know, juggle things at the same time. You don't know where to start and where to begin, where it ends, and, you know, even what to say, you know, how to respond or how to react, for that matter. And Stephanie, I really commend you for what's going on in your situation. Like I've said many times, you know, I give it to the Lord above. You know, we all have our demons. We all have our situations. But your daughter might be right in this one. You know, God's got a purpose. He's got a reason. And, you know, don't ever be discouraged. But know that, you know, people are listening. There are people in touch. And when you put him in the situation, you know, you don't know what's being stirred up and how it's being stirred. Just know that you're being seasoned. That this is what it is, and move forward in life. Don't hold still, and stand strong, because the waves will crash and the mountains will crumble. But you know what? He stands there with his arms open wide, from the far to the east to the west. So anyway, thank you so much for sharing your story, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And of the amazing backbone of Legacy Programs, my secretary, Christine, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I just want to say the show was great. Stephanie, I'm so sorry to hear what you're going through. As part of Legacy, I'm going to be helping you through the whole way. I do have a background in legal. So I'm going to be getting in contact with you to help you out. We will get those GoFundMe pages up, and we'll be able to get you to go back to seeing your daughter and grandkids, and getting Lawrence to get that, to get to talk to her spiritually. And
So I
just want to let you know that I will be taking this full on. So that way we can get you the help that you need.
Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome. And so I just want to conclude this wonderful show today. And I want to thank all of my guests, Jeffrey, Stephanie. I want to thank my secretary, Christine, which might I say that without her, none of this would be at the rate that it's going right now. So thank you so much. And of course, my supportive brother, thank you for always having my back. And even when I'm not able to, you know how hard I work, bro. So I apologize that if I'm not in as much contact, and it seems like we talk more on Sundays than we ever do. So I apologize for that. I've been super swamped. And Leona, thank you so much for the opportunity to give me a position and a voice to not only heal myself, but to give the opportunity to heal others. And this is advocacy, folks. This is what it's all about. And I encourage everybody and anybody to reach out to New Vision Organization based out in Massachusetts. Reach out to Legacy Programs, Education Reentry. You can find us on legacyprograms.net, and Leona will give her information. Donate, please. And just, you have no idea how much an email or just a phone call can help somebody. So I encourage you all to explore yourselves and to be part of this this perspective of being of service to others. So, and Leona, you want to give your contact information for New Vision?
Yeah, I just, you know what, I really want to just say I apologize because I do this every time. I want to mention your son too, because Lawrence and his son have an excellent rapport. And this is another thing I admire about Lawrence, is all the things that he's gone through all his life, and he is still very close to his own son. They have a good rapport. And I always forget to mention him when I do mention your family. So please forgive me for that. And tell him,
you're right.
And your wife, I hope that bit of the COVID that she has, I hope that she can overcome that as well. So say hello to Samantha and also to Caden. Is it Caden?
Thank you so much. We all appreciate it. You got any contact information for New Vision?
Well, our website is nvoprez.com, and my email address is nvoprez@verizon.net. And we are also with the prison, the International Network of Prison Ministries, and you can find that on INPM, International Network of Prison Ministries, just typing in New Vision Organization, Inc. Thank you.
Nice. And thank you so much. And anything that we do, we work with New Vision Organization. So Legacy is aligned. And I just want to say thank you to all my guests, everyone that tuned in, everyone that listened. You know, one thing that I've learned of being away from society for 20 years and in a different type of society is that support is so necessary. And it is the core value that we need for a successful and permanent reentry. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, and you all have a wonderful 4th of July. Light off some fireworks. Be safe. We want all our fingers at the end of the night, right? So I just want to say God bless y'all, and happy Independence Day, okay? And enjoy
thank
your freedom.
You,
and enjoy your family. Yes, absolutely. So y'all have a wonderful evening, and just go with God and be in peace as much
Amen.
As you can, okay?
Thank you.
Amen. Happy 4th, everybody.
You too.
Happy 4th.
You did an excellent job, as always.
Oh, thank you. I learned from the best. All right, y'all. So this is going to conclude this show. Next